PPI.org.
Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussion on disability topics. I am Charlene Dahl, sitting in for Sam. Today, we were talking to Matt Ader from Vispar, which is a very interesting company. Hi, Matt, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you and sharing all about what Vispar is up today.
Yeah, let's just start out. Who is Vispar?
That's a great question. It's kind of a loaded one, right? So, for many years, people knew about companies like Freedom Scientific, Optelec, Enhanced Vision, and the Paciello Group, which are the four companies that make up the Vispar family. And I think that there's a lot of confusion on, have these other companies gone away? And the answer is no. Vispar is really more of a holding company. It's a place where shared services across all the different brands can exist. But when it comes to what we deliver to our customers, is really those four brands. And we can go through and explain how those all interconnect. But the there's been a lot of confusion in the industry that, Freedom Scientific went away or Optelec went away or, the people who do those things that you've known for these many years are doing those things, and they are. It's all the same people that were doing them before. They just sometimes use a shared name called Vispar because they're representing more than one brand.
So let's start. How did the term or the company name Vispar come to be?
So it's a Latin word for see and hope. Okay. And so being the fact that the majority of what this company does affects people with low vision or who are blind, and the technology that we make affect people with vision loss, we decided that that was, an appropriate name.
Okay, well, that makes sense. How about if you would mind talking a little bit about yourself and how you got involved at this level? I'm sure you've had a long career, obviously, in technology. So can you give us a little history?
Yeah, sure. It's funny. As most people, you go through college and you think and you have a dream of what you want to do when you grow up. And it's nothing what I'm doing today, right? I went to school for broadcasting and television and things of that nature. And when I graduated, worked in public radio and commercial radio and TV for a while. And in 1994, moved back to the Virginia area where I live now and in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And was asked to do training on assistive technology, and this is, not at a time when most of the products that I was training on don't exist today, which is always, 25 years later, you kind of expect, but it's weird that the brands are so different than what they were then. And so I did that for a few years, joined the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind in 1996 and ran their technology division to help train people who used assistive technology on how to use that technology. And then I went and worked at different industry product companies in 2001 and then ran large government contracts from 2002 until, 2014. And they were things like providing training, help desk support, engineering support to federal agencies to assist their disabled employees and using different assistive technologies. So whether it was, you know, an organization like Social Security Administration or IRS or any of those others that have large numbers of people with disabilities working for them, you know, I was working within those organizations to make sure that the assistive technology and the user support and the training all went, you know, went well for that. And then in 2014, joined at the Freedom Scientific to start a consulting group within Freedom Scientific to help organizations who were buying our software and hardware, such as JAWS and some of the hardware, such as Focus Braille displays, solve accessibility-related problems. And when we think about that, you know, just the other day, you know, Domino's Pizza doesn't want to make their website accessible.
We're going to talk about that at the end of the show. So,
yeah. Exactly.
We're going to go.
But that's an example of why we got into consulting, was because of organizations needing to make sure that their digital properties became accessible, so that, you know, people who were blind, and in this case, you know, we were very focused on blindness, not or low vision, not on all the other disabilities that we are focused on today when it comes to the consulting practice. But, you know, there's many of our customers were challenged with accessibility issues. And, you know, we were, you know, in a spot where we could assist those organizations because we had both the expertise and the technology that they were using in JAWS. So that's did that for, you know, 5 years running that consulting practice. And through that time, you know, we, you know, acquired some other companies along the way and grew that to be a, you know, sizable organization, and then moved into the running business development in 2019.
I think I was remiss in not acknowledging your title. You are Vice President of Business.
Yeah, Vice President of Business Development for across all the brands. Within, so if you, you know, again, Freedom Scientific, Optilex, Enhanced Vision, and the Paciello Group.
So that this part is sort of like going to a little mini mall, in a way. You've got all these four different entities, plus the consulting. I take the consulting part as a different aspect of the group?
Yeah, the consulting falls under the Paciello Group, so that's
okay.
That's the organization. Yeah, so maybe it's good to break down those brands for everybody, because, you know,
exactly.
if you're a blind consumer and you've always used JAWS, you don't probably interact with Optilec or Enhanced Vision or the Paciello Group on a regular basis. If you're a, you know, low vision person and you go and you buy a camera, you may have looked at Optilec, Enhanced Vision, or Freedom Scientific products. And so if we take a look at those brands, and we'll start with Freedom Scientific because its brand was formed originally out of, you know, three companies. With Hinter Joyce, Arkenstone, and Blasey. And, you know, for the many years, it was mainly a software company. And over time, they developed hardware as well to support their customers. And products such as JAWS, OpenBook, and later when we acquired AI Squared, which made Zoom Text, those are the kind of, you know, key software lines of products. And then on the hardware side within Freedom Scientific, you have products like Focus Braille displays, which come in different sizes. You have the Ruby handheld magnifiers. I'm going to forget a brand, but, you know, one of these products. If I try to go through all of them, Topaz video magnifiers. And then they also had standalone scan and read machines as well. And if you look across the brands, if we move to the others, you know, you'll see very similar, like, hardware products where you have the handheld, you know, magnifiers with Optilec called Compact. You would have desktop units called ClearView. And then they also have scan and read devices like the ClearView Reader. And then if we moved over to Enhanced Vision, you would have products like the Merlin as a desktop unit, the Pearl's a I'm trying to think of all the Pebble is the handheld product. They have a wearable called Jordy. So there's like a wide range of products across all of these different brands that do similar things, but sometimes are met differently based on the or sold differently based on the market that the distribution works in. And so, you know, one product may be better sold through, you know, VA systems for the veterans and or blinded veterans. And then another product may do better in schools. Another one may be do better in the vocational rehabilitation. Some others may be bigger in government. So a lot of it just depends on the distribution channels. And, you know, for most of us who are listening to this interview, you know, if you're a consumer of these technologies, you know, you don't deal with, you know, these companies as much as you deal with your local distribution channel. And so, you know, whether it's a person in Bethesda, Maryland, who's selling you the technology, or a person in Huntington Beach, or a person in Austin, Texas, you know, you're dealing locally with that distribution channel. And we want you to continue to do that because it's the right approach, because they're able to drive out and support you. And so, you know, from a company perspective, you know, even if, you know, you may call our main phone number and it says the Sparrow, and then it's going to talk about the different brands. And if you call tech support, those tech support people can support all of the products across the company.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so whether, you know, you may get a software support person who's covering Zoom Text, you know, JAWS or something like that. And then, you know, if you end up with a hardware support person, they could probably support Ruby, Compaq, Pebble, you know. The one thing I probably, you know, if you think of it from a brand perspective, we actually believe that more people know the brands by the product brand names, because Ruby and Focus and JAWS specifically, and even Zoom Text, those are brands in themselves. And, you know, sometimes people just know you as the JAWS company, and that's okay. We're fine with that, you know, because it makes sense for that customer.
Yeah. Okay. So all of these companies still have websites of their own, correct?
Correct. If you can go to, you know, thesparrow.com and find all of the brands' websites, but you could go directly to freedomscientific.com or Optilec has multiple, you know, domains depending on the country you're in, Enhanced Vision and the Passiello Group. All of those four companies have their own brand websites.
Now is the next question. You're not just in the United States. You're in
international
many countries,
yeah,
in the world, correct?
Yep. Yeah, we have, I think, and I don't know if I'm going to get this number right, so hopefully nobody quotes me on the number, but it's like, I think we're in 70 countries.
Wow.
Now our products are in 70 countries, is what I had heard at one point. From a where we actually have staff, it's mostly in you know, the U.S. With headquarters in Clearwater, offices in Huntington Beach, California, and then we have offices in Canada where we have staff, the U.K., Barendrecht, the Netherlands is kind of our third major hub. That's our European hub. And then I'm going to forget a country. And then we cover, you know, Belgium also with an office. So, you know, once again, I'm probably forgot a country. Oh, Germany. Germany's a huge office and location for us as well.
Okay.
But, you know, if someone in South Africa needs us, you know, we have international sales teams who support it.
Good. I think that's an important aspect. This is just not a little thing. This is huge all over the world because people need equipment. And a lot of countries are very supportive of their disabled people and provide a lot of the equipment. So we understand how important that is.
I think on top of that, I think you, you know, one thing, you know, for people to realize is that, you know, we're not just in this because we're business people. We're in it because we live and breathe it. You know, I'm blind myself. My colleagues are blind and low vision and use this technology every day. You know, our one of our sales man call our help desk. You're also going to get blind and low vision employees. The people building the software and the hardware. You know, they're blind and low vision themselves. Not everybody, but you know, it's what's great about that is that we can really drive solutions, not just based on, you know, theory. It's based on actual experience of the people who work there.
Great. I think let's talk about low vision, because the statistics are very clear that with the older population, particularly baby boomers, there is more need for magnification systems, and whether it be a handheld or a CCTV, that whole landscape has changed too in the last, oh boy, I'd say 10 years at least.
Yeah, so, and there's such a unique, you know, you used the word CCTV because that's what we called them before, right? And now they've kind of like tried to rebrand themselves as video magnifiers, because CCTV is the camera in the corner spying on you when you go through a shopping mall, right?
Yeah, I'm old,
but,
what can I say?
I still say CCTV, so I get it.
My first I just want to mention, my first one was a Visual Tech from the 1970s. The thing,
and I had one
monster,
too.
A monster.
Yeah, and they were what was great about them is they would now be antiques because they were wood paneled. You know, my first unit was only made for right-handed people, and I'm a left-handed person because the camera was built into the side of the monitor on the right side, so I would have to cross across the paper when writing and block the camera, which was kind of an awkward thing.
Well, mine was totally separate. The camera was, you could put it anywhere.
It looked like a microscope, right?
It was huge. The lenses were, I mean, now we have things we can literally carry in our pocket.
Yeah, and that's the uniqueness about low vision, that I think it's confusing because there's no one product that meets everybody's needs. You know, you may use one for doing arts and crafts. You may use another one for reading a medicine bottle. You may use a different one when you go to the store, a different one when you watch TV. You know, if you're sitting down and reading a book, it may be a specific style. A lot of it depends on the use case, right? And the other day I was playing games with the family, and I couldn't see the colors on the board because of the lighting. And so I ended up putting the board underneath a Clearview Go so I could actually see the colors and the shapes, and zoomed right in. And they're looking at it going, wait a second. Our board's the size of, you know, an index card, and yours is the size of a, you know, a 15-inch monitor, but I could see it and play then, right? So I could participate differently. And so, you know, I think that when people look at all these different devices, and even looking at, you need to weigh what your needs are, and you need to weigh, you know, look at what are your use cases, and then determine, is a, you know, a handheld device going to benefit you? In my home alone, I would probably have, I think I have four different low vision aids, video magnifiers that do different things, from a handheld to a wearable, a desktop unit, and actually, I guess it's only three units. So I have three.
Well,
today.
If you want to count the iPhone's magnifier, you know.
Yeah, and so that's an interesting one, because the iPhone magnifiers is something that, depending on someone's vision loss, it may work for somebody. Now, if you had to read a lot, the challenges are that there's no handle on an iPhone.
Right.
It's focus was designed not for short, close distance, but for distance, long distance, right? So it's built around taking a picture of a person or a thing, but not necessarily focusing on text. And so when you compare the quality of the video for somebody who's sitting down and reading with a Ruby, it's drastically different when you use an iPhone. And touch screens, are becoming more prevalent today, but with, you know, because of the iPhone. But it doesn't mean that a senior who has potentially mobility issues along with vision loss is going to have as easy time using, you know, touchscreens. Now, we have touchscreens in some of our handhelds today and some of our bigger units, desktop units as well. But you, that's why you have multiple different types of products out there on the market, is to, you know, meet different people's needs. I've, you know, tried to use, and in a pinch would use the iPhone's camera, but I couldn't look at it in that game setting that I was with my family the other day. I actually need to go get something, bigger screen.
It's fatiguing. You'd need something different.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that people, you know, when you look at all the different, you know, technologies, is understanding that there's so many different low vision conditions. Mm-hmm. That, you know, one technology may work for a certain low vision condition, but it's not going to work for the next one.
Right.
And then, as you just said, fatiguing. I think, you know, people who just sit down and read a book don't understand eye fatigue as much that affects someone with, you know, who's low vision. Because when they sit there and look at a screen for, you know, a long period of time, that's tough. And if you try to use a wearable and put that on and try to use it for 30 minutes to read a book, you're not going to be able to do it.
No.
I took a wearable last night to the Nationals baseball game and used it to be able to see, you know, the baseball game. But, you know, I'm not reading the jersey numbers. That's not how close I'm. I can't do that, right? It doesn't matter how big I make it. I need to be, like, right behind the guy to read his jersey. That's how close I need to be, right? And I'm not getting that kind of vision, you know. But I'm taking it off in between bats, at bats. I'm taking off during in between innings because I can't sit there for a three-hour baseball game, you know, with a, something strapped to my head trying to see it.
I'm just wondering, are these companies that are doing the magnification products, are they really starting to focus on the elderly person that who's going to only need it for maybe a few years?
Well, I think the one of the challenges in this industry that is not always defined well for the consumer is that our product lines are still considered a niche market, in that there's not millions of people spending money on these things like they do with TVs and phones, right? And so when you think about the, you know, product lifespan, you know, some of these products are, you know, 5-10 years. I still have I almost said CCTV. Still have a CCTV from, you know, that was from 2002 that works perfectly fine in my house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, I pull it out for certain needs, but it's not like I keep it out on my desk at all times. If, you know, somebody who's, you know, losing their vision at 60, you know, it's not like they're going to be done with it in 2 years. If somebody who's in their 70s or 80s, they may choose not even to bother with it, and they, you know, may use other ways to accomplish the tasks. And, you know, I know I have a guy who's 74, and he has, you know, one at the horse farm and another one on his desk at home, and he has a handheld that he keeps in his pocket.
Right.
And if people get a chance, it's a great video. There's, if you go to YouTube and go to the Vispero channel, and Vispero, for those who don't know, it's V-I-S-P-E-R-O. So if you search for the Vispero channel, there's some great videos up there with customers talking about how they use this technology. And there's a great one on low vision and the different devices.
Let's talk just briefly about how much Braille has changed. I started in the Slayton Stylus and Perkins Brailler, you know, back in the 60s. But it's all different now. There's lots of choices.
Yeah, and I think very similar to the low vision aids, the Braille displays, and, you know, if we think about refreshable Braille, you know, when you're looking at devices, you're looking at them based on the use case again. So, for example, I have a Focus 14 that I carry with me every day, you know, when I'm traveling. And I use it to, you know, control my smartphone with my iPhone. And I can type on my iPhones, you know, using the Braille display and read the text messages and read my emails, respond to things, answer the phone, start music, whatever I want to do. Size-wise, it's great because, again, I can carry it with me. I could put it in a jacket pocket, those kind of things. Then I have a Focus 40 that I would actually, you know, hook up to my computer, either Bluetooth or using a cable, and you know, be able to type on my computer, read stuff on the screen, that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, it's portable. It's more likely going to be sitting at my desk or going in my bag when I take my laptop with me. And then the last one would be the, like a Focus 80, which is back when we designed, not we, but back when, you know, people were choosing 80 characters for the length of a Braille display. They were doing it because of, you know, DOS was actually 80 characters across the screen. And that's why it's 80 characters, is because, you know, it was made sense. We could cover the entire width of a computer screen. And once you got to Windows, that all changed. Nothing's actually fixed in terms of sizing. It's all up to the pixels and the font sizes that people want to use. So but people are using those for, you know, call centers. They're using them for, you know, programming, using it for editing, things of that nature. But those aren't portable in the same way. You're not going to take it somewhere. You're going to leave it at your desk and use it. I think it's wonderful to have Braille being so portable, being so available to connect to any of your devices, whether it's an iPhone, an Android phone, or a Windows computer running JAWS. You have all of that power at your hands. And I don't... even though I can use the on-screen keyboard on an iPhone, I can also do dictation. I still, if I'm going to write something more than that, I pull out the Braille display every single time to write, even text messages, just because it's so much faster, it's more accurate and all of that kind of stuff. So I think it's wonderful to see people having access to more content today because of Braille, because you're not having to, you know, order books and wait for books in bound copies and how thick they may be. You can just get a digital one, and whether you're reading on Kindle or reading on iBooks or Bard or one of the other systems to download your digital version of the book, it's awesome that you have that at your fingertips at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, my notes for you are sitting here in this little device I have, and I'm not carrying a bunch of papers and fumbling through everything. So, yeah, I when I was a little girl, you know, Braille, you either could read large print or Braille. Well, I couldn't read large print, so I had to learn Braille at a young age. And I am so glad I did, because at some point we thought Braille was going away, but I don't think it is. And I think it's actually stronger now because of the electronic devices.
I would agree. And I think that, you know, this is about all of us educating children, parents, and teachers, and reinforcing the need, and that it's not a negative stereotype. Somebody asked me the other day, would I want to wear a wearable on my head, because don't you look a little different? Don't you, people are looking at you. I'm like, people are wearing Google Glass like, you know, five, whatever years ago, and people, you know, granted the wearables that, you know, low vision people will have to wear a little bigger and bulkier than that, but who's to say, you know, if you want to accomplish something, you got to just do it. And we have to give people the power to say, it's okay to use Braille. It's okay to read Braille, and you should want to do those things. And because it improves literacy. You know, it's if all I did was listen to my computer all day long, you know, could I have been a strong writer, you know? And so even though I don't sit down and read large chunks at a time in Braille like some other people do, I still use it every day for typing and editing.
Do you, in your consulting, or do you, the manufacturers, do they work with other software entities, you know, such as Windows and these other things to try to head off problems?
Are you asking about the Braille specifically, or were you talking more in general for the consulting side?
I guess I'm asking for the JAWS portion of it. I'm a JAWS user,
uh-huh.
And sometimes it's like, why didn't this work? You know, it's...
Yeah, it's funny. I'm you know, I was in a couple Facebook groups and watching people, you know, comment on stuff, and one of them was commenting that, you know, JAWS should do a better job at solving all the problems on a bad web page. And the problem is that one of the things that's lost in all of this is that we use the word screen reader, and in reality, a screen reader today is not reading the screen; it's reading the code.
Mm-hmm.
And you know. It gets its information from whatever the developer or the content creator gave it. And so if you have a, you know, a video player on a web page, and you get there and you'll hear things like unlabeled button,
mm-hmm.
or button zero. Well, JAWS is getting that information from the code of the web page, and the developer needs to put a proper label on that so that a person who's blind using JAWS or using a Braille display can get that information correctly. And there's, you know, all of this concept of an automatic fixer out there that can, like, go fix web pages for you. It just doesn't exist today.
I guess that does bring us into the Paleo.
Right, the consulting, the Passiello group.
Yes, sorry.
The fourth brand. And, you know, they're you know, their goals are to help organizations solve these problems. You know, whether it's a Domino's or is in that last, you know, the mm-hmm. lawsuit that they tried to take up to the Supreme Court.
They got shut down.
They got sent back to the lower court and said, the key with this is that. That would have really done a lot of damage to people who are blind, and other disabilities, because we would have had, you know, organizations saying, look, they didn't have to do it, so why am I doing it? And, you know, my concern is equal access in society. We want to participate just like anybody else. And if I want to go to a restaurant, whether I want to go to the restaurant online and order food, or if I want to go there in person, you know, the building has to be accessible. Well, what about the digital content that's on those, like the kiosks?
We'll talk about that in a little bit.
But those, and all of that is part of this consulting arm to come in and help the organizations solve these kinds of things. And whether it's, you know, web pages or applications. And one thing that's unique about the Passiello group and compared to other organizations that do similar consulting is that we also can do a lot of solving of problems for employment situations because we make JAWS, you know, within the Freedom Scientific side of the business, and we make Zoom Text. And so from an employment perspective, employers who are, you know, having people who are blind or low vision working at their organizations can tap into the Passiello group to come help them make sure their internal apps, not just the external facing websites and mobile apps, but their internal applications that everybody has to use by working at that organization, let's make sure they're accessible. Because, you know, I could care less about a website that's selling me pizza if I don't have money to pay for that pizza by having a job. And so we need to ensure that, you know, whether it's the internal applications that these organizations are building at financial institutions or restaurants or commercial companies, that they're building those accessible so that the people who are blind and low vision or other disabilities can actually interact with those applications and be productive on the job.
So I believe I saw on the website that the group provides a and correct me if I misread this, a free analysis of a website?
Yeah, it's called ARC, A-R-C, which is Accessible Resource Center. And basically, it's a tool that can spider a website is kind of a generic term, but it basically goes through and catalogs as many of the errors that it can find based on the criteria of the WCAG, the World Wide Web Accessibility Guidelines. These accessibility guidelines then get scanned, you know, and then we come back and say, hey, you have, you know, 15 errors per page on average, and these are the errors you have, and you can go down and figure out what the issues are. There's nothing, there's some things that the tools can do, and then there's some things that, you know, people still have to do. And that's part of the consulting side, is to come in and walk you through that content, the free accessibility scan, and help an organization determine, do we need to do more than this? Do we need to have, you know, testers go through and find the issues that they're hitting? A machine today doesn't tell you all the issues, so we still have the consulting side as well.
Without saying cost, because that's an FCC thing for us being community radio, is it really huge amounts of money to repair a website?
So I always like to equate things like when you're first building a house versus updating your house later. When you go in and you're buying a new house, and they'll offer you all these upgrades, and they'll say, hey, would you like to have, you know, these different windows put in, or would you like your bathroom to be upgraded with a jacuzzi tub or something like that?
Right.
And you say no, because I don't want to spend the extra $2,000, and I'm just going to generically say $2,000. But
right.
Then 5-10 years later, you say, you know what, I'm ready to upgrade that bathroom or remodel, and now it's $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know exactly what you're saying.
I don't want to say that everything equates that way, but it's obviously cheaper to make these decisions when you're building. And when you look at the severity of the issues that come back when you're looking at challenges on the website, one of the things you have to do is figure out, you know, what are the different priorities, and which ones stop people from actually interacting with my site? What stops them from doing business with me? And that's why when we do the consulting, we're helping you make those decisions. We're going to tell you, hey, these are higher priority than these. These are lower priority because the person could still buy your goods. They can still pay their bill. They can still, you know, order your services or whatever it may be. If, you know, ranking the things and telling people, you know, what things they need to focus on is very key. Additionally, it's important to help an organization find the things that can knock off a big chunk of them at one time. And one of the neat things about the ARC platform is it comes back and tells you not only that you have this error, but that this error may exist on every page on your site. So if we knock that one out, and it's a 100-page site, we just knocked off 100 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Not one. Websites today use a lot of templates to drive the way the page looks. So if we can fix things in the templates, we can fix things more broadly. So going back to your original question, is it expensive? You know, we're actually not fixing the site for people. We're telling them how to fix the site or what things they need to fix. So they still have their own development teams that have to pay to make changes or fix the sites.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen jobs that are, a couple thousand, or you can see jobs that are very expensive. And a lot of it just depends on what the tasks are and what they're trying to accomplish.
Do you think there's any way we could make developers more aware on the head end of the project?
It's training. It's all about training. Like any organization, the key is giving them the information, and if they know about it, and I've done a lot of training of developers. My training's not as technical as some others in the organization, but when I sit down with the developers and we get that, you know, the aha moment where they're like, oh, that's really bad. Then they're now solutioning differently after that point when they realize what a screen reader does. And they become so much smarter. And, you know, half of it, I mean, you could do an hour talk and you're going to make a huge change in the decisions that a developer is going to make, because they're not going to stop and just learn that 1 hour talk. They're going to go research and find more data. And there's so much good data on the web in terms of, you know, blog posts or, you know, training out there, mm-hmm. That they're going to go out there and figure out a lot of this stuff on their own once they understand the problem. And that's the first thing, is understanding what the challenges are. Now, I'm never going to say it's that easy for everybody. So, you know, at the Paso Yellow Group, they offer training for companies to teach them how to do this, whether you do a live class or you do, you know, take an online course that they offer to help people learn about digital accessibility and coding things correctly.
Do you think, and this is just an opinion only, the recent Supreme Court non-decision, you think that will impact many private companies?
I think that, you know, whether it was, you know, the original Target one or Winn-Dixie a couple years ago or this one, they're all driving change, and awareness is the first step, right? A couple weeks ago, I never even thought about the Domino's website, right? Except for what I had read about the lawsuit. And the other day, I was watching probably like a football game or something on TV, and there was a commercial from Domino's saying, go to our website and you get a discount. And I'm sitting there going, wait a second. But I can't get the discount because I couldn't go to the website.
That was the crux of the whole...
I think in the end, you know, companies do business through digital. They don't just have a storefront anymore. No different than requiring you to have handicapped parking spaces. This is access to your business. And so, yeah, I would expect that this is going to drive more. Now, I unfortunately think there's a good and a bad to the lawsuits. The bad is that there's a lot of negativity around it. The good is that it creates awareness. And I think that if companies out there want to solve these kinds of problems, they can do it ahead of time. I also think that there needs to be some understanding that small businesses may need more time. They shouldn't be attacked like this versus, you know, large businesses who should, you know, do what they're doing right away.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting future here to see how things really come out in the end. So let's talk about kiosks, because that also has been a big deal here recently. First of all, can you tell us what a kiosk is? Because that has changed.
So it's funny, because if you think about a kiosk, let's start with the ones that most people know and use, which is like an ATM. Okay, it's kind of like a kiosk. It's a self-service. You can walk up, put a card in, and buy some, you know, get your money out. Okay, that's the one you probably everybody's used, is an ATM. The next one that got and ATMs today are, I haven't found one that's not accessible. So I think that, you know, they've done a nice job with that. There's a headphone jack on all ATMs. Plug your headphones in, and away you go. Now, keep in mind, we all have to now still carry around the old headphones, not the ones that work with the iPhone today. So now we're carrying around two sets of headphones, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. Yeah.
The next one that kind of, you know, became required to be accessible through the FAA and Department of Transportation was the kiosk that you'll find in airports where you want to print your ticket, your boarding pass, or you want to change your seat or buy something, you know. So those were required to be accessible. But other things that people use them for is self-service. And whether it's one that you use at a grocery store to check out.
So let's talk about kiosks, because that also has been a big deal here recently. First of all, can you tell us what a kiosk is? Because that has changed.
So it's funny, because if you think about a kiosk, let's start with the ones that most people know and use, which is like an ATM. Okay, it's kind of like a kiosk. It's a self-service. You can walk up, put a card in, and buy some, you know, get your money out. Okay, that's the one you probably everybody's used, is an ATM. The next one that got and ATMs today are, I haven't found one that's not accessible. So I think that, you know, they've done a nice job with that. There's a headphone jack on all ATMs. Plug your headphones in, and away you go. Now, keep in mind, we all have to now still carry around the old headphones, not the ones that work with the iPhone today. So now we're carrying around two sets of headphones, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. Yeah.
The next one that kind of, you know, became required to be accessible through the FAA and Department of Transportation was the kiosks that you'll find in airports where you want to print your ticket, your boarding pass, or you want to change your seat or buy something, you know. So those were required to be accessible. But other things that people use them for is self-service. And whether it's one that you use at a grocery store to check out in the self-service lines, or at a restaurant where you walk up and you want to buy a hamburger or a pizza or something like that, or where you go to a shopping mall and there's a directory, or you walk into a VA and you want to VA hospital and you want to check in and let them know you're here for your appointment, or you go to your clinic to see a doctor, and they all have kiosks today.
A kiosk,
everywhere you're going.
That touch screen that you can't figure out what's on it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, and the touch screens exist everywhere. I mean, I have one just to ride the train into DC. I have to go over and use a touch screen. I tap the bottom corner of the screen and it starts talking. In the ATM world, you plug in your headphones and it starts talking. We have done some work within the JAWS product to enable it to work on these self-service kiosks. And, you know, whether it's using a touchscreen or using some type of other form of input, you know, like a keyboard or a there's a company called Storm Interface, which has a product called the Audio Nav. And basically it's, you know, a left, right, up, down, and a center button. And when you plug your headphones in, JAWS will start talking if that device has JAWS installed on it. And, you know, it'll provide you instructions on press the right arrow to move forward, press the left arrow to move back, press the down arrow to move to the next section, press the center button to select something. So if you're, you know, trying to walk in and pick a movie out at a movie theater, or you're getting your train, you may use that kind of input, or you may use a number pad, or you may use a full-size keyboard. Today, JAWS software is in about 10,000 kiosks in the U.S., and you can find them in you know, places like on a Carnival cruise ship. If you go on a Carnival cruise, Holland America or Princess Cruise Lines, and you go to the Internet Cafe, you can plug in headphones. I think their command to launch it, because it's an older computer, is F12, and JAWS will start talking. And that allows somebody who's blind to sit down and use the Internet to, you know, book a shore excursion, or look at their bill or do email on the boat, just like anybody else.
Wow. You think
that one's not a touch screen. That one's a regular computer. But
yeah, the older things would be, yeah. You think they'll ever get to the point where you can use Bluetooth so you won't have to carry all these headsets with you?
I don't think so. There's too much security around it. I mean, a lot of these devices have payment systems connected to them. There's a lot of risks around that. So I don't anticipate Bluetooth any day soon. Now, who knows what tomorrow's technology will bring, and you know what comes after Bluetooth. You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Well, there's always that little adapter that you can.
Exactly. How many adapters do we have to carry around?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, device heavy, adapter heavy. Got a bag full of adapters everywhere I travel, right?
But you know, things are a lot lighter and smaller than they used to be.
Yeah, you take a look at like. You know, the Focus 14, I said that I carry everywhere I go. I mean, it's very light, you know, compared to the first Braille display I saw was something back in the 80s called VersaBraille. And it was heavy, you know. You wouldn't carry that around very far.
Well, the first Kurzweiler I ever saw in the 70s took up a whole table.
Sure.
You couldn't carry it around. It was
not. Nope.
So, yeah, things are really, things are getting smaller, and you know, in perspective, things are much more efficient for us than in the past. I mean, we can do things on our own now. We don't always have to have somebody reading something to us.
Yeah, that's what's
to you
so
guys.
Great about, you know, all the even apps on the phone. You know, the free apps from like Microsoft and others that allow people to do that. You know, I mean, like Seeing AI is a great invention of just, hey, I want to read something quick, you know.
That was a question I thought of, is apps and websites and things that are on the computer, are those totally different things in how they work and how they can be accessed in terms of technology?
So, you know, there's different versions of apps depending on which platform you're in, right? So the an example would be in Windows 10, you may have Office 365, you may have Office 2016, or you may try to download, you know, there's an app called the Microsoft Office Store apps. And each of them are coded slightly different. And so one of the things I always recommend to people is try to stay on the latest technology you can. And so the Office 365, which a lot of people get confused by and they think it's only on a website because it's cloud-based. But you can install the full version of Microsoft Office using 365 and get all the capabilities of it. And it's just the difference is it's updating on your computer, you know, I'm going to use the concept of 4 to 6 weeks, you know, not knowing their entire development cycle. But it's key to be on the latest tech. And those apps, you know, are available also on your phone, the Microsoft apps. I'm not sure that they work slightly different with VoiceOver than they may with JAWS, just because JAWS is on a Windows PC with a lot more power to the PC than, let's say, a phone that has a limited view screen and limited menus being shown at one time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in a perfect world, what would you want to see happen with technology that would be the most awesome thing?
I think when companies collaborate better, you know, similar to like what we're doing with these kiosks, when we're working with the kiosk hardware manufacturers, we're working with input devices, you know, we're bringing in, you know, Braille technology and speech into these kinds of scenarios. That's when we can really strengthen the opportunities for people by having, you know, collaboration across different companies to drive that change. If companies sometimes try to do it on their own and add, you know, stuff to their technology without actually understanding what the user is, or the user's needs are, we have greater challenges. So I think that, you know, forms of collaboration among entities like ours with other companies to help them drive change is key. I think if we can, you know, encourage Congress to work on legislation that could help drive accessibility as mandates, similar to the ADA, where it's very clear, and not just through the courts, but through legislation, I think is key, so that people understand what their requirements are and they're not guessing. I think it's still key to do that. I think the courts have done a nice job in terms of trying to say that it exists, but it's always good to have the backup from Congress. Additionally, I think continued collaboration. I love the collaboration we have with Microsoft and Google. It's great. That kind of stuff allows us to build better technology and them to build better technology to work with us. And as I said, Google, of course, my Google Home started listening to whatever I was going to do.
Yeah, well, I find that particularly interesting because I know Microsoft has built in some screen reading stuff in their base computers, in the software itself. But JAWS is still the preferred for most people that I know.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between, they have to do things, because they have to do what's right by putting narrator in the system, and also because of probably legal pressure as well. When you building a DVR, which is what, Xbox can be more than just a game system. It can also be what you watch TV on. There's rules that require them to have accessibility in these kinds of devices. If you're building phones, the FCC is going to require that kind of stuff. And so at the same time, they use it to test and validate that they're building things accessibly so that JAWS can read it. What I find is employers still need a company who is making technology work with all of the different applications out there. And JAWS has more power to be able to do that. We've done a lot of work in the last year to make it more accessible to people at home by creating the home use program where, JAWS is $90 a year instead of, the original, $895 or something like that. And again, I'm not exactly sure on the price. And pricing's not part of this conversation. But the key was that we wanted to make it easier for people who couldn't afford it. And I think that was a key thing that we did.
Yeah, JAWS, it's still the big player. And ZoomText works with JAWS now, right?
Yeah, they're both compatible together, and then we came out with a single product line that it combines the two called Fusion. And so if you purchase the Fusion product, you actually get both products installed in your computer, both ZoomText and JAWS.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. I learned a lot. I hope our listeners will enjoy listening and understanding the nuances of all this stuff. It's kind of Greek to us sometimes, and I think it's a good thing to sit down and talk about it once in a while and let people know what's going on and how much we are moving forward, and that's for sure. And how can
I really appreciate your time and look forward to sharing this episode out there.
Hey there, podcast editor Aaron here. If you want to reach Vice Sparrow, you can reach them at 1-800-444-4443 or go to the website mentioned there. That was Matt Ader, the vice president of Vice Sparrow, interviewed by Charlene Dahl, October of 2019. This has been Disability in Progress, here on KFAI.org. The views expressed are not necessarily of KFAI or its board of directors. Thanks for listening and take care. Oh, One quick promo before we go.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Metro Transit. Metro Transit now offers use of an app that connects blind and low vision customers to a live agent for navigation assistance during transit trips. More information at metrotransit.org/AIRA.
KFAI.org.